This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of September 24th, 2018. I'm Mason King. If you're looking for a room in downtown Indianapolis, you've got a lot of choices. There are 32 hotels in the Central Business District with a total of about 7,500 rooms. Now, for a city that hangs its hat on sports tourism and convention business, an adequate supply of hotel rooms is absolutely critical for success. On the flip side, too many rooms could spell trouble for much of the market. And it's not just a question of beds. The kinds of hotels can make a huge difference. Hoteliers are very enamored right now with niche, boutique-style hotels, while the city is working on a deal to create another massive hotel, rivaling the JW Marriott, in hopes of attracting more big conventions. As of this month, several new hotels were under construction, adding a total of more than 500 rooms when completed. But the pipeline is enormous. There are 8 more projects in the planning stages that could bring another 2,200 rooms. So how much is enough? How much is too much? What are the right kinds of properties, and are they in the pipeline? To get a handle on these vital questions, we turn to one of the foremost experts in the Midwestern hotel market, Mark Eboli. He's managing director for CBRE Hotels Consulting. Mark also has the distinction of growing up in Meridian Kessler and attending School 84, go Bingham Bears, and Shortridge High School. Here's our conversation, which kicks off with questions about the planned Intercontinental Luxury Hotel that IBJ recently reported on. So, Mark, before we get into it, I want to ask you about a piece of news that IBJ reported, I don't know, about a week and a half ago, that the Intercontinental Hotel chain has agreed to open a 180-room hotel in the Illinois building at Illinois and Market Street. I know a bit about Intercontinental because I lived in Chicago for a while. How big of a deal is this for Indianapolis?
I think it's certainly a vote of confidence in Indianapolis. It is likely to be in the what Indianapolis would perceive as the luxury market. We have 2 luxury hotels in the market today, possibly 3, depending on how you count, but certainly the Conrad and the Meridian, and the Intercontinental will be a good competitor to those hotels.
And the Meridian used to be the Canterbury, is that
That's
right?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, that was kind of my question. Is would that hotel, the Intercontinental, would that just instantly become the number one choice for the luxury traveler, or does it more exist alongside?
Great question, and the answer is a big it depends. Intercontinental is part of a brand family, which most hotels are part of today. Meridian, for example, is part of the Marriott Starwood family, and Conrad is part of the Hilton family. And these are brands that are licensed to owners. And Intercontinental is the same way. Intercontinental is the upscale, upper upscale luxury brand offered by a company called Intercontinental Hotels Group, IHG, who also does, at the other end of the spectrum, things like Holiday Inns and Holiday Inn Expresses. And these can be analogous to automobiles, where at one end you have Cadillac and at the other end you have Chevrolet, all offered by the same company. And so the question of its competitiveness with these other hotels will depend on things like design and what it looks like and how it feels. Are the normal issues of how people choose hotels, pricing, for example. One that's developed over my career just in the last 20 years are loyalty programs, where it's well documented that if you are a collector of Marriott points, you will drive by 6 Hiltons to go stay in a Marriott. So Intercontinental has their own loyalty programs, and they'll have their own fans and collectors of points, and they will do well in that group. They may not do as well in people that collect Marriott points.
In general, what can we expect from the Intercontinental? What's its vibe?
The other ones in the Midwest that I'm familiar with, there are 2 in Chicago. There's one on Michigan Avenue, and there is one at the airport, both of which are very nice and would certainly compete with the Conrad and the Meridian here in terms of their finish and level of service. One is at the Cleveland Clinic next to the world-famous hospital there, which is also, again, very top shelf. So there are in other areas, the shadings between brands are sometimes blurry, and people associate there are Marriott's luxury brand, for example, is Ritz-Carlton. So these brands compete against each other based on many issues.
I don't know if it's possible to say at this point, what kind of room rate would you have there in Indianapolis?
I would certainly expect them to be the you travel for business, I'm sure, and you recognize that, you know, what you pay in a hotel depends on a lot of different factors. Who you are, when you call, when you want to stay there. You pay differently in Indianapolis during race week than you do on a Sunday in February, for example. So in the hotel business, we use a term called average daily rate, which is taking all of the rates that people have paid over a year's time and averaging them out. And so we use that to compare one hotel against another to begin to get a sense of where they're positioned in terms of consumer recognition and pricing. Mm-hmm. And so we would expect a new Intercontinental to be comfortably north of $200 in an average annual rate.
Okay. And for the daily rate?
Yeah. Well, again, over a year's time.
Okay.
Now, that would be a much lower rate on Sunday in February, a much, much higher rate during race week.
What is the next big hotel announcement?
It's a great question. I don't know probably much more than you do. There has been discussion for many, many years of a new or an additional large convention hotel in the city. And there have been a number of sites discussed for this. One of the prominent ones is the Pan Am Plaza site, which is adjacent to the convention center and has the ability to be directly connected to the convention center, which is a big advantage. So people have been talking about a hotel on that site for perhaps as many as 20 years. Now, so in that 20-year period, other big hotels have been built, most recently the JW Marriott. And so it's hard to say when that will happen. I think it's probably safe to say that another large convention hotel will come to Indianapolis in the future. They are very big hotels like that are very difficult to finance, very difficult to pull together. And one of the most difficult parts from a developer standpoint is timing. The worst thing that can happen is to open a new hotel, large or small, in the teeth of a recession.
Right.
And because hotels are far more sensitive to recessionary factors than they are, for example, to a new hotel being built next door. So the investors in a new large hotel are trying to predict when the next recession will be, which no one knows, of course. All we know is that every day we get farther away from the last one, we become one day closer to the next one. But we don't know how deep it's going to be, how long it's going to be. But that is probably number one thing on the mind of folks who are contemplating that.
Right.
The second factor to be contemplated is that virtually all of the big, large hotels have historically enjoyed some municipal support through tax incentives, bonding, different mechanisms that are used. You know, the underlying rationale for that is that these new big hotels, as opposed to a smaller hotel like the Intercontinental, the big 1,000-room JW Marriott actually changes the city's competitive position for big groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people at the Convention and Visitors Bureau here in Indianapolis, I'm sure, have a list of groups that they would love to go and pitch to come to Indianapolis if only they had another big hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite real. And that list is real, and their ability to penetrate that list is real. And somebody with a sharp pencil can do the math of saying, how much can we afford to spend to attract this new business to the city?
Mm-hmm.
And that's contrasted to the Intercontinental, a smaller hotel, of which there are many coming online, where it doesn't really change the competitive position of the city. There's not a group out there in Kansas City saying, you know what, let's go to Indianapolis this year because they've got that new 180-room Intercontinental.
Right. Yeah, if you're for the golf course superintendents of America,
you need
that big hotel so everyone can stay together.
Or the AMA or Gen Con or anything. So you know, smaller hotels simply take a share of a somewhat finite pie.
Mm.
Bigger hotels make the pie bigger.
I know that the city's Capital Improvement Board had asked developers to present some scenarios or some development plans for a hotel. And I think that they're going to, by the end of the year, come out and say something about what they found, whether or not they're going to go with somebody. I don't know. Have you heard anything about who might be interested, where the hotel might go?
Absolutely nothing I can talk about. And again, there are sites other than Pan Am Plaza that I've seen discussed, even I think in your paper.
Yeah.
It will all come down to economics.
Okay. It's interesting what you say about the recession, because I think we're all sort of sitting here just waiting for it to happen. And I mean, you see people say next year because of the, you know, I think partially because of the super long bull run we're on in the stock market. I think everybody always says like 18 months from now, and they've been saying that for the last 5 years.
That's quite true.
How does a hotelier make a decision based on that?
No, it's tough, and it's actually even tougher for the big ones because they take longer to do.
Yeah.
If we got a green light today to build a big 1,000-room hotel on Pan Am Plaza, it would probably take at least 3 years until it's open, you know, with all of the things that have to be done. So not only are you trying to predict a recession, you're trying to predict where it hits within this period.
So it's essentially impossible.
In my line of work, we are often asked to predict the future. That's one of the reasons people come to us. And as I often tell my clients, that if I could predict the future, no offense, I wouldn't be talking to you.
Speaking to the story that we're going to have in the IBJ by the time that this podcast is available, let me just give you the blanket question that I think the layman always has about downtown Indianapolis. Are there too many hotels already in downtown Indianapolis?
The answer to that is demonstrably no. We get that question a lot. Are we becoming overbuilt? To use a graphic example of 5 pounds of potatoes in a 10-pound sack, are we making the bag bigger with the same amount of potatoes? And which would tend to dilute any given hotel's share of that market. And that intuitively makes a lot of sense that would happen, but we can demonstrate arithmetically, and we have really granular data on this, that by and large, since we've been collecting data starting in 1988, Indianapolis has absorbed all of the new hotels that have been added during that period. And we can quote statistics if you like. We've got a lot of them. That's harder to do on the radio. But by and large, for example, in 1988, citywide, not just CBD, but the entire city of Indianapolis, the occupancy was 62%. And
annual. Oh, annual. Okay. Over the course of the year.
Over the course of year.
62%.
In other words, I've got a 100-room hotel. Last night I sold 75 rooms. I have 75% occupancy. Mm-hmm. If I do that arithmetic 365 times and add it all up, I figure out what my occupancy percentage is over a year's time.
So market-wide, it was 62%. Now, that does not sound like much to the layman, I'm sure. But that isn't bad. As I recall,
well,
in the industry,
I've never met a hotel owner whose occupancy was high enough,
but they can survive.
It's only good or bad depending on what the future brings. And for example, so that's 1988, occupancy was 62%. In 2017, citywide occupancy was 65%. So we're better, right? Absolutely, no question, we're better. What's perhaps even more interesting is, in citywide, in the entire city in 1988, there were roundly 17,500 rooms in the city. And that goes all the way out to the suburban collar.
Yeah.
So 17,000 has grown in the intervening, 29 years or so, to today in the neighborhood of 31,000 rooms.
Wow. So almost double.
Almost double, 80% increase. Mm-hmm. And so, it's a long-winded way back to your question. So during that period of time, 29 years, we have almost doubled the supply, and yet occupancy, as expressed as a percentage, has gone up. So by definition, all of those rooms have been absorbed, and then some, because occupancy is higher today than it was in 88. Now, you know, we've had some bumps in the road along the way. You know, we had back in, I think the record low was in 2010, in the very teeth of the last recession. That number dropped to 54%.
Oh, is that right?
And so it's a precipitous drop. Yeah. It had nothing to do with new hotels. Had everything to do with just a total falling off the charts of business travel.
Right. Gotcha. So today, in downtown, how many hotel rooms do we have?
In downtown, roundly 7,500.
Okay. How many hotels is that?
32 hotels today.
32. Okay. And then what is the downtown occupancy rate?
In 2017, the occupancy downtown was 72%.
And how is that in general?
Okay.
The hotel operator looks at that and
says,
smiles.
He says, I'm way better off than I was in 2013 when it was only 70%. Okay.
Yeah.
And yet I have a lot more rooms today than existed 5 years ago. And I can do the same numbers that I quoted on a citywide basis, for example, in just the downtown market. We don't have numbers going back to 88, but in 2001, occupancy in downtown was 65%. Today it's 72%. The number of rooms has grown from roundly 3,600 to roundly 5,400. So almost a 50% increase in the number of rooms, and occupancy has gone up 7 points.
Wow. Okay.
So are there too many rooms in Indianapolis? It depends on if you own an existing hotel, you don't want any more hotels. You're just fine with the number of hotels that are there. The real world is looking at this saying, you know what? Demand is growing faster than supply. There's an opportunity here.
So there are three hotel projects currently under construction downtown, 659 rooms. We have eight more projects that have been at least announced that could bring as many as, say, 2,200 rooms. So if you add all those together, you've got about a 40% increase downtown.
That's right.
That sounds like a big increase.
It is, and it probably won't happen. In other words, we slice, and the level of certainty, one is a hotel that's actually under construction. Dirt is being moved, steel is being erected. That's under construction, that's gonna happen. A next slice we call final planning, which means we're starting to get financing, we're lining up a deal with Intercontinental or a brand of some kind. And then there's planning.
Hmm.
And now planning may be just two guys in a bar with a cocktail napkin and penciling on the back of this. So within your number, what will happen is the hotels get built will preclude the other hotels that are in preliminary stages. So there's, to some extent, the ones that are in first are the ones that get done and exclude others in that pipeline.
Let's say all of them got built. What would happen to the market?
It would probably be tough. I mean, yeah, again, 50% increase in supply has never happened in Indianapolis. I'm not aware of any city in the United States, possible exception Manhattan, where that's happened.
What is the city's reputation among hoteliers? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And because I lead our practice in the Midwest, so I cover territory essentially from Minneapolis to Memphis and Cleveland to Kansas City, a lot of real estate. And so, you know, similarly sized cities include the Columbuses and the Minneapolises and the St. Louises and Kansas Cities that certainly on one hand compete, as we talked about before, for groups. In other words, they're all going for the same group of American Bar Association lawyers or medical or this. So depending on their facilities, they're all competing for the same groups. Not all have done as well as others. Most of the cities in the Midwest have not recovered to pre-recessionary levels. Indianapolis did so 3 or 4 years ago. So Indianapolis, along with Chicago and Minneapolis, are some of the happier stories in my, for lack of a better word, Rust Belt world. The folks in some of the other similarly situated Midwestern cities with a manufacturing base have not done nearly as well.
Why did Indianapolis do well?
That's much as, you know, your paper championed the writing about this. I mean, I honestly grew up in Indianapolis. I went to Shortridge High School and PS 84, so I go back a long way. And I honestly believe that it is, this will sound Chamber of Commerce-y, but it is consistent, high-quality leadership on the city and private and public sector level over two generations, starting with Dick Lugar in the 60s and Unigov, which created a tax base that other cities envied, and all the way through to, you know, really aggressive investment in infrastructure and convention center and athletics and medical and the university. You know, when I was a kid growing up in Indianapolis, IUPUI was a sleepy little blip over there that you barely knew where it was. And today they've got tens of thousands of students resident there in dormitories, and that's in, you know, that's an often unsung part of Indianapolis' success. College towns are great for hotels. The stability that the university and education plays in reducing the volatility of economic effects, because recessions don't seem to have as much an effect on universities. So markets like Columbus, Ohio, markets like Indianapolis, other towns with big universities in their core are more insulated from recessionary periods.
All right. We'll leave it there. My thanks again to Mark Ebeling. You can find a more detailed dissection of downtown's hotel blitz and how lodging firms gauge demand on the cover of this week's print edition of IBJ. Also on the front page, Anthony Shutley explains how Indianapolis became the primary proving ground for both AT&T and Verizon's new 5G service this year. Okay, there's also Houston. Okay, but we have everything east of the Mississippi. This is a huge deal for a city aggressively pushing its status as a tech hub. Again, you can read all about it on the newsstand, in the copy of the IBJ you have delivered to your home, and at IBJ.com. Thanks again for listening to the podcast. I'm Mason King. We'll be back again next week.